translation. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Yeah. So we've got to cover it three different ways. Yeah. Atreya Rishi said, the Prabhupada said, if you try something six times and it doesn't work, you can accept it as Krishna's mercy. Okay. So here's the purport then. Generally, Prabhupada says, the distressed, the needy, my cell phone just had a message come here. I'll show the message. And it says, Ramananda testing. Okay, we got your message. It came just now on the cell phone. Generally, the distressed, the needy, the intelligent, and the inquisitive, who have performed some pious activities, yeah, worship or begin to worship the Lord. So his whole purport is just full of references to Bhagavad Gita and other places like that. Yeah. Others who are thriving on misdeeds only, regardless of status, cannot approach the Supreme Lord, Supreme, due to being misled by the illusory energy. Therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And then we have this reference here. So the first verse, of course, seems like exactly like Bhagavad Gita 7:16, the four kinds of people that approach Krishna: those in need of comfort, those in need of money, and those who are curious, and finally those who understand Krishna. And these are, as I understand, progressive, because at first they just need help in every respect, you know. And then after that, money, okay, they may not need, you know, so much help for medical problems or relief from a famine or a war, but they need some money. And the next, the inquisitive, as I understand, is more like the people who like to talk about God, they like some idea like that, because it's the most interesting topic. You know, it's, and there's this phrase that many people are looking for God, but most of them hope they don't find Him. You know, because looking for Him, being inquisitive, is very gratifying to the mind and everything else like that. You know, so we're coming more and more subtle. And finally, is those who actually have, you know, a philosophical understanding. They surrender their intelligence. They understand Krishna philosophically, you know, and so they serve Him out of duty. Sometimes it's said they serve Him out of a desire to become freed from the reactions to their sinful activities. You know. So they're not in looking for anything from Krishna, you know, gross, you know, or subtle, yeah. But they're looking for liberation sometimes, which is not bad, because until we get liberated, then we can't really understand Krishna and serve Him. You know. So this is most people. Kunti is different. You know, she's approaching Krishna. She's not approaching Krishna for relief, although she is in this ultimate sense like that. So it's very interesting, these prayers, to analyze Kunti's consciousness, because she says directly she's not on the level of Mother Yashoda like that. And as we mentioned before, our conclusion is that she's also concluding she's not on the level of Arjuna. You know, and therefore she's taking shelter of Arjuna to get good association with Krishna. So does she want liberation from Krishna? You know, is that what she wants? Yeah. If we analyze these prayers, then we can begin to see and contrast our own consciousness, and we can, you know, try to improve and make our service better. Okay. In the second paragraph, it says here, second sentence actually, others who are thriving on misdeeds only, regardless of status, you know, cannot approach the Supreme Lord due to being misled by the illusory energy. So she will address this herself a little later. And she says, Janmai Shwarya Shruta Shribir. Yeah. That these four things are very intoxicating. You know, good birth, good wealth, good education, and beauty. So if you belong to a very aristocratic aspect of society, you're very beautiful, and you're very well educated, and I mean this technical knowledge, but also his history and things like that, you know, and you've taken also a good birth, then the illusory energy will just convince you that you are the body, and happiness is in that area, like that, you know? And you know the thing is that these all may be temporary results, you know, of a certain karma. But they're not really, really pious karma. For example, when you're crossing the United States, if you take the Southwest Airlines, you know, may go from like Tennessee through Las Vegas and on to San Francisco. So you're crossing the U.S., it takes about maybe 4 or 5 hours to get to Las Vegas. And you're passing over all this agricultural land with, you know, cities below you and roads. Then you start coming to the desert. In places like that, and there's nothing below, nothing. Then right out of nowhere, it says, of course, you know, the horizon's coming before you, so you begin to see the towers of Las Vegas, and you know, 50-story pleasure hotels, and they have an Eiffel Tower, they have the Empire State Building, all these things, they have pyramids, and it's just incredible, you know. It looks like Bilba Swarga, the subterranean heavenly planets. Yeah. And it's like that. It's isolated, so it doesn't have any influence from other activities. All four principles can be broken there legally, like that. Yeah. Whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Yeah. So these people are enjoying. Actually, the pleasure in Bilba Swarga is greater and the pleasure in Indraloka, the material gratification like that. So they're thriving on misdeeds. You know, it's pious because they get some kind of gratification, but has an impious aspect to it, which actually leads them away from Krishna. I want to speak of them, you know, it's also us. So point in here, maybe we should be very cautious about having material opulence in a material facility, you know, in terms of refrigerator, automobile, and color television. Yeah. So Prabhupada goes on, and he says, therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. So I was thinking you still kind of have some alternative, but Dhruva Maharaj, this was kind of what he was forced to do, because he did austerities, he was forced to enjoy the results. So we can actually, you know, almost by consciously doing these austerities for Krishna, it'll force us to take shelter of him, which if we want to do that, okay. One devotee, Krita Karmadas, a very good friend, he's Cuban, but he got involved in some stupid activities and he actually got AIDS, you know, like that. But before that, he was like, you know, chanting his rounds sometimes, very friendly person. He was temple commander, this and that, you know. But he wasn't always so strict in his sadhana, getting up, everything else. So he said he prayed to Krishna. Krishna, please force me, you know, to chant my rounds, follow everything strictly, get up in the morning. And so he was kind of like when Krishna was in the super soul, was saying, well, you sure you want this? So he said, yes, you know. He came back again sometime a little later, maybe a week later, and he said, are you sure you want this? I said, yes. So maybe three times he prayed to Krishna sincerely, chanting with this attitude for several days. And then after several things happened, he discovered he was HIV positive. You know. So the thing is that if you follow our sadhana strictly, get up in the morning, everything else, chant your rounds, it won't progress. This is Jaigore Sundar. He was in charge of AIDS testing for the state of Maryland, virologist. So he said that, yeah, but, he said, but nobody can do this, you know. You tell them, just do this. You know, they can't do it, you know. But so he was forced. If he didn't come to Mangala Arati, if he didn't get up early, if he didn't chant his rounds, he was going to die. So he had no alternative than to take shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. Okay. Then this also reminds me of chapter 23 in the Krishna book, which is the wives of the brahmanas, you know, going to see Krishna performing sacrifice. And they're a typical example of people who were very pious. They were earthly gods. The kshatriyas, everything, were worshipping them, so forth, so on. But after their wives just ran off, you know, somehow or other, to see Krishna, and came back, even though they were in distress, they just surrendered to Krishna. They came back. Then the Krishna book says, after the return of their wives from Krishna, the brahmanas, engaged in the performance of sacrifices, began to regret their sinful activities in refusing food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah. They began to talk amongst themselves, to hell with our being born Brahmins, to hell with our learning all the Vedic literatures, to hell with our performing great sacrifices and observing all the rules and regulations, to hell with our family, to hell with our expert service in performing the rituals exactly according to the descriptions of the scriptures. To hell with it all. For we have not developed transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the speculation of mind, body, and senses. So it says that then, after they saw the effect on their wives, they also wanted to go to Krishna and Balaram and surrender. But they were afraid that Kamsa would find out and chastise them. You know? So they didn't have this sufficient background of pious activities to give them faith and knowledge about who Krishna is so they could surrender like that. There are three kinds of pious activities. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, it's in one purport. Pious activities for sense gratification, elevation to heavenly planets, and then pious activities for liberation, and finally pious activities to advance in devotional service. So they didn't have this background of credits, so they could surrender and trust Krishna. So we're doing good things, you know, according to Krishna's system in this world. He's called them mundane activities. But if we have some idea of doing this for God, even though it's very general, it's building up, you know, and that will give us faith in Krishna and everything else. Okay? You have a picture of a cat like that. Cats are many times amongst the most selfish creatures. They'll torture the mice and everything else like that. You know? So very, very qualified brahmanas, but they're at heart, they're a little bit quite disqualified. Now Krishna himself came asking for food, and they said, "Go away." You know. Okay. Then Prabhupada goes on, constantly remembering the lotus feet of Lord Krishna means preparing for liberation from birth and death. So this is smaranam, no? Yeah, smaranam. Therefore, even though there are so-called calamities, they are welcomed because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation. Like that. Yeah. So this is a very important verse. Atate, tate, tate nun kampam shashvato. Yeah, like that. Yeah. That if one accepts all of these reverses and problems as the mercy of Krishna, you know, then it's not a problem. You know, probably sometimes it says we should tolerate them, but in many cases if we don't have to tolerate them because Krishna is actually sending us something to help us. So we should take them as good obstacles. Mm-hmm. So for my picture here, I have a picture of somebody pole vaulting, right? The obstacle's there, and we take it as we just want to avoid it. We want to do something to counteract it. But actually, we can take it actually as the mercy of Krishna, so we can learn something very nice, you know, take it as a good thing, like this and that. Of course, it may come to your mind, too, that Narada Muni had this horrible calamity. His mother died, didn't have any father to take care of him, anybody else, but he took it as a great opportunity from Krishna, like that. Yeah. Prabhupada goes on to say, one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nescience, can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hooves of a calf. Mm-hmm. So you have a picture of a child here hopping over the water puddles. Yeah. Now, of course, this reminds us of a verse by the prayers by the demigods when Krishna was in the womb. And very, very common verse too, like that. Yeah. Hari Leela is going to quote it now.
Satyavratam satyavratam.
Oh no, it's after that. After that, Vipadam.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. It's almost that. Those are the prayers. They start Satyavrata. Mm-hmm. But then they say the same thing. Mm-hmm. That by taking shelter of the boat of your lotus feet, one can cross over just like one crosses over the water in the footprint of a calf. So one thing, again, as we begin to know all these verses and hear them, we see Prabhupada's purports are just simply, you know, putting together all these different verses. Mm-hmm. You know? And actually, you don't have to learn. That's why one thing I've noticed by studying Prabhupada's books like this, with this Bhakti Bhai Bhava and everything, there aren't that many concepts to learn, really. I mean, you may get a few details, but definitely it's not like this one long string of concepts. There are definitely some things that are more important, and some ideas and principles that are more important. And when they start to stand out in your consciousness, they allow you to deal with life with a much better set of priorities, you know, and stuff. Yeah. So this, of course, is again a verse that the prayers by the demigods to Krishna in the womb, like that. And they make this point that if somebody can get a hold of the lotus feet of Krishna, then the material world, liberation, everything else becomes very simple. You know, we're always happy. You know? So Kunti, Krishna is about to leave and go back to Dwarka, and she'll say at this point, you know, you're leaving us, you know, and you know, but before, you know, you're always with us when people were trying to poison us, when they were trying to burn us to death, when they were trying to be eaten by cannibals, when we were being drugged and naked into the assembly of uncivilized men, and finally when we had to face all these great and cruel generals like that, you know. And so I would prefer those situations, you know, if that means we're going to see you. Now that everything is supposed to be nice, you know, why is it nice? Because you're going to go away. So she has that perspective. But because she wants to serve Krishna, that's interesting. Yesterday was Radharani's festival. So she also wants to keep Krishna with her, you know, so she can serve him. Because she enjoys the service. In the beginning, Prabhupada says it's like that. We enjoy serving Krishna. You know? But Radharani is even beyond that, you know. It's explained that the gopis know that really Krishna can only be happy in Vrindavan. You know? And so even though there's so much opulence in Dwarka and his real family is there, they know that Krishna must actually be really unhappy. You know? So they want to have Krishna come back to Vrindavan so they can serve him, not so they can be happy doing their service, but so Krishna can be happy. But Kunti is asking for liberation, you know? Yeah. And no more repeated birth and death. Yeah. Yeah. But then that's, of course, necessary to serve Krishna, you know, like that. So, you go on here, the purport. Then Prabhupada says, such persons are meant to reside in the abode of the Lord, and they have nothing to do with a place where there is danger in every step. So I think this is also in the prayers by the demigods, Vipad, every step there's danger. You know? Yeah. This material world is certified by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita, so again Bhagavad Gita, as a dangerous place full of calamities. Krishna says, Dukalayam, Ashashvatam. Yeah. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. Now, always remember that Prabhupada says, this body doesn't get diseases. Yeah? This body is a disease. So you may have a disease on your disease, which happens. People get one disease and they don't take care of it and they get the disease on that disease. You know? Yeah. But that's the material world. If you're going to get rid of the problems, you're going to get rid of the material world. Like that. And also this reminds us of Tad Vag Vishargo Janataga Biplavo Yasmin Pati Slokam Abandavati Api. No, it's one before that. Yeah, it's one before that. Anyway, it says that the devotees, they don't associate with these pilgrimage places for crows. Tad Vayasam Tirsam. Yeah, Tad Visharga Janataga Biplavo Yasmin. They go to the places where the swans associate with beautiful crystal clear waters. And so in our graphic here, we also found some nice pictures of beautiful rivers and flowers and swans, like that. Yes, this is the spiritual world. The material world is, but I think, even, of course, hotels, we're in hotels here, and five-star hotels. And of course, they try and make it seem just like that, like Bilba Swarga. But if you start looking at the edges here and there, you see so many difficulties, problems, and things aren't quite as nice as they should be. But the spiritual world, everything is quite wonderful. Everybody is a person. Everybody's trying to do his service in the best way possible. Here in the material world, if somebody spills something on the carpet, then maybe you can clean the stain up 90%, stain guard carpets. But still, there's going to be some mark there. And there's going to be some kind of undesirable smells. And maybe some bugs are coming to eat that and moving your nests in there. So, in the spiritual world, everything and everybody, down to the last seamless part, are all devotees trying to do their service. And trying to improve things. And Prabhupada says that people have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without a trace of calamity. So this is the whole point. This avatar, Krishna, comes where he sends his representatives to give us information. And so, of course, we want to accomplish that too. Wherever we go, whoever we meet, is just give them some information based on Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, in the beginning, it may be very general, just that, the fragrance of the earth, the light of the sun, the taste in water. Pantheism is the first step in God realization. So if we're appreciating that, or the flowers are Krishna trying to smile at us, then we can point people's attention to these vibhuti matsattvas, these specific energetic incarnations of Krishna. And beyond that, of course, in his Varna Ashram system. So many ways. And you see, this is why people are attracted to different kinds of stories. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Harry Potter. Biography of Dwight David Eisenhower. Because you see, they actually are manifesting these qualities, which are qualities of Krishna. And so it's not invalid. It's not wrong. It's just trying to encourage people to move ahead and develop some service attitude like that. And then we can begin start to become informed about, you know, the real abode, like that. Yeah. Yeah. So I was remembering this story. You may know this story. I think it's called Wind in the Willows is the book, and it's a story about Brer Rabbit, Brother Rabbit, and the Tar Baby. And there's some real good graphics on the internet for this one. So this is from the last section where Prabhupada says, less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust to those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is full of calamities. So this is a very famous story, and it says that Brother Rabbit, you know, he was a little bit of an arrogant guy about his wealth and his physical ability and all this, and Brother Fox was always trying to catch him, Brer Fox. You know? Mm. So one time, Brother Fox made his plan up, and he made this baby out of tar, you know, black sticky tar. And if you see the picture, he put a couple coins for the eyes, had a cork for the nose, folded a coat across, and put a hat on. And he put him right in the path where one of the pathways where Brer Rabbit used to pass by, you know. So I get the next picture too here. Yeah, here it is. Many pictures about this. And people appreciate this story. Hmm. So it says that Brer Rabbit came down there, feeling pretty happy. It was a nice sunny day, hopping along. But then this tar baby was right in the middle of the road, and he couldn't quite get by him like that. So he said, good morning, Brother Tar Baby, and brother, friend. And it's good to see you, but maybe you could just step a little bit to one side here so I can go by. I have some important things to do. But the old tar baby, he say nothing. That's how it goes. So then Brother Rabbit was a little incensed by this. This fellow wasn't responding to him. He said, hey, are you deaf or something? He said, I know you got your rights too, but this path is big enough for both of us, so you move to one side there and let me go past. But old tar baby, he say nothing. So then Brother Rabbit became a little angry. He said, okay, unless you move aside here, I'm going to give you a whack on the side of your ear, you know, teach you a lesson. But the tar baby also didn't respond, so old Brer Rabbit whacked him on the right side of the ear, and his hand stuck in the tar. Then he started trying to pull it loose, and told him, let go of me, let go of me, and the tar baby didn't say anything, so he warned him he was going to hit him with his left hand, which was twice as strong. The tar baby didn't say anything, so he whacked him with his left hand. Now he's pulling and everything else this way and that way, and the tar baby's not cooperating. So then he tells him, hey, you know, I've been giving you the minor part of my power. Now I'm going to kick you with both my powerful hind legs, and I can do that. I'm a rabbit, you know. So let me go or else you're going to get it, you know. I'm going to adjust this situation. But old tar baby, he's saying that. So Brer Rabbit bounced. Bounced up and down, and pulled both his legs back and just smashed them in the tar baby's stomach, and they both stuck like that. So now Brer Rabbit's squealing and screaming and pulling both his arms and pulling both of his legs and can't get up and howling and complaining and cursing the tar baby. And finally, he decides the ultimate weapon. He's going to butt him right in the face with his head. So, unless he lets him go. But the tar baby doesn't let him go, so he just pulls back and just smashes right into his face. And yeah, tar baby's face does get realigned, but now Brother Rabbit's really caught, you know. And this is difficulty, because, you know, all that Brother Fox has to do is come along and catch him and have a nice meal. But some people say that Brer Bear came along after a couple hours and saw poor old Brer Fox there and pulled him loose. But Brer Rabbit left a lot of hair behind in the tar baby, you know. And he learned quite a bit of lesson about being humble about other people like that. You know? So it's the material world. We try and make devotees, we're a little bit more intelligent, hopefully. You know, we eat too much, and we try and compensate by eating something else to try and feel better. Then we kind of compensate by something else, you know. But this is one of the fundamental principles of material nature, is we try and make corrections to our problems by other problems. Yeah? At least we can try and reduce that. Yeah? But if we have some good association, good knowledge, then we can be positive. We can be utsahan, enthusiastic, and we can actually deal with any problem like that. Yeah? To try and improve ourselves. Then we see that all the problems Krishna is sending are actually, you know, to increase our enthusiasm, you know, to increase our knowledge, to get ourselves better and better situated in liberation, where we can see Him positively and start to reawaken our positive relationship with Him. Another picture of a... Okay, my phone's going off here. Another picture of Brer Rabbit and the Tar Baby there. I got old Brer Fox up in the corner to come and eat the Tar Baby. This also reminded us of something else. This is Hanuman. Hanuman was jumping to Lanka, if you know this story. But on the way, he met three different obstacles, mm-hmm. like that, you know? And the first one was Mainika Mountain. Hope I got it spelled properly. And this mountain came up out of the ocean and was apparently obstructing his path. Then he realized that actually it was trying to give him a place to rest. So he was misinterpreting it as someone trying to help him as an obstacle. So he touched it with his foot and thanked the mountain and went on like that. The next obstacle was Surasa. And she was some kind of like ocean-going monster. But she was just a test from the demigods. So she wasn't really an obstacle, you know. She was a test to see Hanuman's determination and to see if he was qualified to deal with the problems up ahead. Okay. So these obstacles come, and sometimes they're actually not obstacles. They're mercy. And sometimes they're tests. And finally there was Simika. And Simika was a real demon, a witch, a sea monster, who grabbed his shadow and actually ate him, you know. And so with that, then Hanuman took advantage of his potency and chopped her into little pieces and got out like that. So yeah, so sometimes, you know, the problems are there. It's an opportunity for us to render service to Krishna and humanity by destroying them like that. Yeah. So with purport, we go on here. The duty of a sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances like that. So how many of us don't want to suffer, don't want problems, don't want to be embarrassed, humiliated, have our fingers cut off, have our teeth bashed out, have our what else we got? Yeah. Well, why are you being so pessimistic, Maharaj? Yeah. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization, because that is the mission of human life. So, death is the sum total of all possible bad experiences. You know, I can start thinking of bad experiences now, you know, and people would be become disturbed. I would become disturbed. You know, and not just physical, but also emotional, which is worse. And so, you know, I want to avoid these. You can't avoid them. That's the material world. If you want to avoid them, that means you're attached to them. And if I want to avoid it, it means that I'm attached to it, you know. So, therefore, we should ask Krishna to start sending these things in such a way that they stimulate us to become detached from trying to enjoy the material world and attached to trying to use every circumstance for sankirtan. Yeah. And then, you know, they come, they don't come, you know. It's all a matter of what situation Krishna's put us in. In heaven or in hell, devotee doesn't care. Because he sees how Krishna's put him there for a certain purpose. And then, of course, he doesn't really suffer at all. Prabhupada says, the spirit soul is transcendental to all material circumstances. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called faults. Yeah. And here we have this verse. Tate nukampam susha mikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Phirvagvapurbirvidanamaste jivete yo mukti pade sadaya bhak. So if one takes all these things as Krishna's mercy and just tolerates them, Krita Karma, my friend, actually used to tell me, he heard what Prabhupada said, that enthusiasm is more important than patience. Uchahan nishtaya daryat. So when you got a problem, okay, you can tolerate it, but more important is to be enthusiastic on how to deal with it. Is it a problem, or is it actually some mercy? You know, is it a problem, or is it a test? Is it a real problem that I got to find some way to eliminate, you know, for myself and everybody else's benefit? Like that. So enthusiasm means action executed in Krishna consciousness with intelligence. Yeah? So you always have to keep clear what is the goal. Anyway, we become befuddled. What do I want to do? Always working on our list of priorities for this lifetime, for this week, for this day. Yeah? And then how can I do it? You know? If those two things are there, we'll be enthusiastic. So I'm having some emotional problem with somebody in the temple or bad administration. I'll just tolerate this. No, be enthusiastic to solve it. You know? But without some tolerance, of course, it turns into passion. You know, so real enthusiasm means automatically you'll be a little patient like that. You know? But the most important thing is you can always be looking how to make some positive improvement in the situation. And finally, Papa says, a man may see a tiger swallowing him, you know, in a dream, okay? And he may cry for this calamity. Probably uses this example many times, and for us Western people, it doesn't really, you know, strike home very much because we don't really, you know, think about tigers. We see tigers in the movies or in the zoo and something like that. They're kind of interesting or something, you know. So I don't know what for us it's going to be, what we see in dreams, you know, like being hit by automobiles and smashed into an L-shaped piece of broken something, you know, or having our feet run over, bare feet run over by someone with our toenails ripped off, you know. Yeah. Okay, a man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream, and he may cry for this calamity. And if you can see our graphics, there's a tiger. Yeah. There's a common phrase that says, if you're being chased by a tiger, you don't have to run faster than the tiger. You just have to run faster than the person next to you. Yes. So, okay. Then Papa finishes off by saying, actually there is no tiger. There is no suffering. It is simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any one of the 9 devotional services is always a forward step on the path going back to Godhead. So very beautiful prayers by, you know, by Queen Kunti. And of course today's prayer is Dipad Shantuta Shashvat Tatra Tatra Jagaguro Babato Darshanam Yat Syad Apunar Babadarshanam. We've given classes on these a lot of times and tried to memorize them. And so you really begin to pick up what the Sanskrit means, and you can start to chant with feeling. And you really feel that Kunti Devi is giving you inspiration about what she was thinking. You know, things become clear like that. Yeah. And, yeah. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we no longer see repeated birth and death. So this is a theme that goes on throughout all the prayers that she repeated birth and death and liberation. So that's pretty much our presentation like that for today. So anybody have any questions or comments?
Maharaj, just a moment. By the way, everything went through without a glitch, so that was really encouraging. I really like the class, Maharaj. There are many pearls of wisdom.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, if I might ask a question. Hello?
We can hear you, Baba.
Yeah. Okay. You probably did an echo, Coco, so I'm...
Okay. Maharaj, with regard to the verse where Queen Kunti is saying so that we no longer see repeated birth and death, that's obviously a different mood from the prayer that Lord Chaitanya gives us, where he says, Janmani Janmanishware, lifetime after lifetime, and where he says, Krishna is free to disappoint me. How do we understand that? On one hand, Queen Kunti is wanting to be liberated, but on the other hand, Lord Chaitanya is not even asking for liberation.
Yeah, I've touched on it a little bit there. That prayer, Aishli Shava Padaratum Panashtu Mama Darshanam, Krishna can embrace me or leave me alone, but in any case, he's always the Lord of my heart. When that occurred, if you read that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that then Lord Chaitanya, I think he said he recited a prayer in a mood of advanced devotion, in the mood of Radharani. So that's a prayer of advanced devotion, you know. And so, in the Isopanishad, in the Nectar of Instruction, again, it's one of these simple concepts you see repeated again and again. Prabhupada especially warns us not to try and imitate an advanced devotee. You know, we should follow the path they follow to become an advanced devotee, like that. Yeah. And so this is apparently a pretty common thing, that we have this tendency, you know, to do that. If we can't do anything else, okay, it's better than nothing. But better is to understand the process they took and then take it up, like that, you know. And of course, an acharya for common people, he'll set an example that common people can follow, like that, and so on. If it's all they can do, you know. So I've also heard one devotee, he said in Los Angeles, he said, Prabhupada, I don't want to go back to Godhead. I don't want liberation. I just want to serve Lord Chaitanya's movement, life after life, you know, with your association. And Prabhupada laughed and said, "It is very nice." He said, "But that is for Lord Chaitanya." He said, "You and I should want to get out of this nasty place." Mm-hmm. And different people on different levels, but sometimes we don't want liberation because we think we're having a good time. Yeah. And my piggies are here. My piggy wife is here. I get slop every day, in good quantities, you know. But we don't see that this is guaranteed duality, and we're guaranteed to suffer. And anything we're getting is because somebody has a plan to exploit us, you know. Yeah. So, and therefore we were happy here. You know? I think we're happy. So in our case, liberation. And the Bhagavatam starts off that way. These first cantos, we see liberation at Hoksaja, you know, the names of Krishna and everything is very Upanishadic. It doesn't get into much, you know, personal relationship and feeling, except maybe when Krishna enters Dwarka. But most of it very much is liberation. But it's for the purpose, you know, of being in a further advancement. It's not to get liberated from my gratification, but it's liberated. To me, the feeling is that Queen Kunti, she's trying to get out of all these problems, and she's very attached to her kids, who are devotees, and she wants them out of problems, because then, you know, maybe something positive can happen. And that she's a progressive devotee in that sense, you know, and she really wants to know Krishna in a more spiritual aspect. So is that okay?
Absolutely, but then, you know, it's just... You're talking about advanced devotion, like the first half of this verse, where she's saying, I wish for all those calamities to happen again and again. That seems pretty advanced in itself, in the same verse, considering nobody really prays like that in today's world.
I think part of the thing, too, was that she's hoping for different problems like that, because she's super experienced that Krishna can handle them, you know. So her asking for problems is not like us asking for problems, and we're wondering, God, are you really there? Mm-hmm. Like that. She's, you know, she's been through it, thick and thin. She knows that he's there, you know, like that. So that's, as you go on reading these things and studying, they become more and more rich, with more and different, more and more different facets. And so Prabhupada says that every devotee should select certain prayers for his own recitation. And maybe certain prayers are necessary for you at a certain time. But as you become advanced, and maybe you go to something else, we begin to realize that we should like have an overview of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, but then probably we're going to really start finding stuff that is good for us and a community of devotees that are good for us to become, you know, educated by appreciating these different personalities. And the soul can do that. The soul can appreciate these personalities and then deal with different situations like that, no?
So then when we're offering prayers, we should be careful with what we're praying, really, is what we're saying, because we're not on, like you mentioned earlier, we shouldn't imitate the advanced devotees. So when we're offering prayers, we can only offer prayers according to our level of realizations, I guess, is what we're saying. Rather than, since if you're offering prayers that sound ideal.
Yeah. Yep. and that's why, you know, so many books for different people Prabhupada gave us. And people can relate to different things like that. You know?
Hare Krishna,
thank you very much, Prabhupada. I really enjoyed your class.
Maharaj, Hare Krishna, this is Mahesh Prabhu. And so I read in a sacred book a while back that we don't choose Krishna, but Krishna chooses us. In other words, you can do whatever you want, you can chant as many rounds as you like, or you can do anything, but it still is not the same as when Krishna chooses us. You could be actually Jagai and Madai, but if Krishna chooses us to be saved, and there is nothing we can do to stop it. In other words, Jagai and Madai were saved because Lord Nityananda desired that. Just because he desired, that was it. They were liberated. Everything else is incidental. There is no, you know, there was no two ways about it. They were going to be saved because Lord Nityananda already decided that they were going to be saved. So, you know, in a sense, don't you think that destiny is all powerful then? And then why do we have to, you know, desire calamities or desire happiness or desire anything if Krishna already, you know, if he wants to save us, then we'll be safe anyway.
Yeah, thank you. It's a very nice argument. Yeah. No, this is, of course, something that comes up again and again and again from, you know, from Martin Luther's teaching, Calvin's teaching, Socrates' teachings, Confucius' teachings, Jesus Christ, Prophet Muhammad, Moses, you know, then on into Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, you know, Lord Chaitanya, prayers of Queen Kunti, everything again and again, you know. So our philosophy on it is achinta, veda, veda, tattva, you know, that from our, what is it? Is it the cat taking the kitten's philosophy? The kittens do nothing. Cat just grabs them, okay. Or it's the monkey philosophy. You know, the monkey doesn't hold on. The baby monkeys have to hold on. So those are two like contrasting examples, you know. So our philosophy is that from our side, we do try, we have to try 100%. You know, we have free will, you know. And in some ways, you know, Krishna's not going to interfere with it. And so we can stay in this. We have stayed in this material world. Prabhupada says, I remember he says, we come to this human form of life after hundreds of millions of lifetimes. You know, with your tongue you can enjoy halava. That's about it. You can't rub it on your nose, your ears, your chest, your feet. But if you become a bacteria, you can enjoy halava with your entire body, like that. You can imagine the Sunday feast just taking everything, just smearing the subjis and the dolls all over your body, and oh my God, you know, what a good feast, Prabhu. Yeah. So, but how long do they live? How much do they suffer? You know? So, from our, we have free will. And we can damn ourselves to thousands of lifetimes of Lord Brahma. You know? Okay, so we have to try our best. You know? But simultaneously, Krishna is known as Hari, the great thief. So even if we don't try, yeah, he's going to try his best to trick us to do something. He's going to try and he invents the rules, you know, that we can manipulate. But now he's going to try and think of some way to break the rules he invented. Can God lift a stone? He can't. Can God make a rock? He can't lift. So he's going to try and do that to try and get us out of this mess. You know. So for him, it's a lot of fun in some ways. He and Balaram are talking about it, and everybody else, how to deal with the material world, how to get people out. You know. And simultaneously, from Krishna's side, yeah, Krishna's always trying. It's like that. You know, somebody asked me this question. He said, does Krishna have, was it one bull more than he loves anybody? More. What's this? Krishna has one cowherd boyfriend who he loves more than any others, like that. Is it true, Mara? Is that Krishna has one cowherd friend he loves more than all the rest? You know? Of course, the spirit is that he rejects the rest or something. You know. So my spontaneous answer was, do you like one of your fingers more than all the rest? Yeah, your thumb is different than your index finger, you know? Yeah, but you like them all, you know? And so that's it. Krishna likes all of us 100%. We're all different. That's Krishna. He's the enjoyer. He enjoys everybody. It's not that he enjoys Radha. Prabhupada says that Radharani is not a post, you know? Everybody has the right to try and be a better devotee than Radharani. But we do it in the spirit of fun, in the spirit of, you know, enthusiasm for Krishna, you know, like that. You know? So from Krishna's side, he's always trying to get everybody out. How much? 100%. Maybe somebody more than somebody else. He's always trying to give mercy to everybody. And from our side, you know, we're always trying to try 100% to take advantage of that mercy, you know, to make ourselves eligible. You know? But Prabhupada says it's not, Krishna's not forced to do it. You've got to understand he's doing it because he's so nice. So that's my understanding of that question. Our free will is, yeah, 100% we've got to try from our side. You know? And then 100% from Krishna's side, he's trying like that. And then somehow or other the fact becomes accomplished.
I agree, Maharaj, with your point 100%. I would ask Mahesh, he said that point he read in you know, a sacred book. I was wondering what that book is, because I've never heard that point made, that someone is chosen and therefore they become liberated, or, you know, get something special. I've never read that anywhere in Prabhupada's book, so I'd like you to, if you could, you know, present where that is, where that point is in Prabhupada's books, because Maharaj's answer is like right on. Now, that's exactly, I think, how I would have answered the same question, is that Krishna doesn't fool with our free will, that Krishna loves us all equally. And especially Lord Chaitanya is just going to everyone, please hit, regardless of what one's past activities were, or even what one's present activities were. Lord Chaitanya instructed Haridas Thakur and Nityananda to just go to everyone and just fall at their feet and beg them, please take, without discrimination. So this idea of someone being chosen, where is that in Prabhupada's books?
I think Martin Luther has that idea. That's part one of the Lutheran ideas. But it's also kind of how it manifests and stuff like that's kind of strange. But you're chosen, and you're going to be liberated, and there's nothing you can do one way or the other. That was one of Calvin's. That was Calvin. Calvin's ideas also. Yeah.
Well, this comes from, I read it in one of Anandamayi Ma's books.
Ah, okay.
All right. So
the question is, did Jagai and Madai have any choice? No, they didn't. Lord Nityananda.
Well, I would disagree completely.
They were forced.
Disagree completely.
You don't have a choice, Prabhu.
Of course they had a choice.
No.
They just took the mercy.
No.
Actually, they did take a choice, because they were there for three incarnations, and they took the choice to come a fourth time, you know, to avoid liberation, so they could participate in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and get, prema. Yeah. this is the point. There's a fear, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha. It says in the fourth chapter that we have, these are the enemies of spiritual life, and one of them is Bhaya. You know? And Bhaya means when we realize we have free will, and we become afraid of our own free will. That and so therefore we want to be forced to be liberated. Then when I go back to the spiritual world, I won't have any choice. I'll be forced to enjoy. The bliss will be so great that I won't be able to leave because we're afraid of our own free will. But that's that. Whether you're controlled by fear or you're controlled by pleasure, like a heroin addict or something, you know. In either case, you have no free will. You know? Yeah. Anybody else have any comments, questions?
Yes, Maharaj. We have Banu Prabhu, who was the first time he's been with us. Banu Prabhu, if you'd like to go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. I'd like to ask Vrindavan Prabhu, Vrindavan Dham. Krishna has friends. How many friends does Krishna have? How much population are there? I don't know. How do I frame my question actually? What sarupa do we take when we go there? How do you fit into over there? Do you fit into as animals or friends? If their friends are already there, do we look into Krishna as animals? Okay. Are you getting any trouble?
Yeah. I can't. I have a hard. Your volume's a little low, and also the question's a little bit not very clear. How many kinds of animals are there in Vrindavan, or like that? I don't understand.
Are the population already fixed? But how many kinds of
oh, okay.
How many friends are there?
I think I understand what you mean. Well, for one thing, is we always make this point that the spiritual world is always increasing, anandam buddhi vardhanam, like that, you know. So therefore, there's always more room, you know, for more of everything. Krishna is a supreme enjoyer, bhoktaram yagatapasyam, like that, and so we can always improve our service. Maybe we're a flower producing a certain kind of rasa flavor, you know, but we can improve that. And then Krishna can enjoy it more. So the spiritual world is always increasing, you know. So, you know, whether the number of whether Krishna is still producing new jivas or not, I don't know. There's definitely room for more. The one point is that time, as we know it in the material world, is different in the spiritual world. Here, time is the external manifestation of the Paramatma. You know, it creates a line and different things like that, past, present, and future, you know. But in the spiritual world, everything is all simultaneously the present, and so past and future are just created for proper orientation to the present moment, like that. So, is Krishna creating more jiva souls, you know, or not? That question can't really be answered because everything is going on simultaneously, like that. But yeah, it's always expanding, like that. So there's no problem. There can be more blades of grass. You know, there can be more, you know, more colors on Krishna's flute. You know, there can be Radharani is always cooking, never cooks the same thing twice. We hear, you know, yeah. So it can always be expanding like that. There's no problem.
Maharaj, Dandavas.
Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Vidagda, your voice is a little bit faint.
Okay, is it better now?
A little bit.
Hang on. Is it better now?
Now you got it.
Okay. I don't know what the... Okay, I just opened the preferences. This is an interesting purport. And it reminds me of a young devotee. Some time back, he made a statement, and it would be supported by something that Prabhupada's saying here in the purport. But he was saying that this world is a dream. And, of course, Prabhupada says in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita that it's the world is real. It's not, I mean, the Mayavadis, they have this, you know, Jagan Mitra, you know, the world's false, and Brahman is real. But when the way he did it, it bothered me that he's telling me this world is a dream, because this devotee, he was known to be irresponsible. And I was getting the impression that his idea meant that what we do here on this plane, on this material plane, doesn't matter, including what we do to others. So although the soul is transcendental to this world, to this mundane plane, and we accept misfortunes like that are common, they're a common experience in this world, death being one of them, we should be prepared for that and take shelter of the Lord. But it does matter how we act and interact with others. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a duh. But
yeah.
I
would say that, again, it's a dream, but it's a real dream. Like Prabhupada had a dream of Bhakti Siddhanta coming to them. That wasn't the same as, you know, walking with Bhakti Siddhanta on the edge of Radhakund, but it was a real dream. And in this material world, there are real mental hospitals, you know. So if you want to get cured, you can go there. It's not the same as the real world. You're still in a mental hospital. Yeah. So that's the most fundamental point, is that it is a dream, you know, but it's not false. I mean, that's it has, when you see it properly, it's like a ladder. If you fall in a hole, and someone puts a ladder down, you know, then the ladder is useful. But once you get out of the hole, you don't use the ladder anymore. That's what I would understand.
Yeah, that's a good point you made. I think you hit it. It's a dream, but it's not false. It's connected with Krishna. It's a separated energy, but it's all coming from Krishna.
And it has a very specific purpose. Very
yeah.
specific, very important purpose.
Right.
Kind of like going to a movie. I mean, the movie's real, but it's... And we go to a movie, we identify with a character, and we just sort of turn our consciousness over to the movie, and we're having emotions, and we're laughing, we're crying, but it's not our real world.
One devotee in South America, she was from South Africa, and she came to marry a very nice devotee in South America, and he visited her family and stuff, you know. And he's from a well-to-do family. He has a UPS franchise for Ecuador. So anyway, nobody could come from the family for the wedding from South Africa. And so then they did a very good, like, they had a good company. They did a very good editing job. It was really a good movie. So she sent it back to her family. And she said her mother had all her grandmother and her aunts and her cousins and everybody there. Basically all these ladies, you know, one afternoon. And showed the movie, and they were all wondering what's going to happen, what was it like, you know, and else. And they said everybody was just, you know, in ecstasy, crying and talking about how she looked and how they did this ceremony and everything else like that, so on. So like you're saying, it's just a movie, but, you know, it was maybe even better than being at the wedding. like that. And that's what actually happens, is that, I mean, Krishna cannot engage in Boma Leela in the spiritual world. You can't tear the intestines out of your Hiranyakasipu and Vaikuntha and toss them all over the place, you know, like that, you know. So he likes to come slumming. So his point of view probably says, and also too, the same way, the devotees, they also can, you know, can get into this material stuff like that, and they can appreciate, you know, that actually in some ways, it can be, it's, you know, a certain kind of aspect. Yeah, this is another aspect of Vaikuntha, and it's actually, you know, this is much fun as Vaikuntha once you get on the inside of the show and stuff like that. You know, life after life, I'll just stay here and engage in Sankirtan and book distribution. But I guess we should go now. It's 12:48 here. So thank you so much.
Sorry, Krishna Maharaj, could I ask you one question very quick?
Oh, okay.
Thank you. How do you pronounce your name exactly, and what does it mean?
Oh boy, I'm working on this too. I was saying Hanuma Prashak, but Vrithidayananda Maharaj, everybody says, no, it's not a long E, it's Hanuma Prashak. Prashak, Hanuma Prashak. Okay. Hanumat is Hanuman. Hanumat means of Hanuman. Like we say Bhagavan, Bhagavat. You know, Bhagavat means those things in relationship to Bhagavan. Okay. And on Indian letters, sometimes it'll say Prashak Kanam Hai. Name of sender. And you're supposed to write your name there, okay, if you're sending the letter. So Hanuma Prashak is a name for Lord Ram. It means he who sent, you know, Hanuman, the sender of Hanuman with a message. That's what it means. The sender of Hanuman with a message. And I guess when Hanuman is coming back with Sita's message, he's going to be Hanuma Prashika. Hanuma Prashaka and Hanuma Prashika. So that's what it is, Hanuma Prashak. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Thank you all very, very much.
Maharaj, I just wanted to say that we have in the chat several devotees saying how much they appreciated the class. It was really nice. Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah, you too. So I guess we're in Vaikuntha.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.
Haribol.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.